Thank you for that very warm welcome. It's wonderful to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here. This is a marvelous series, and Paul, I really have to take my hat off to you to produce this week in and week out. I'll read poems from each of my collections, but I wanted to start with something that's very recent. We just arrived from New York a few days ago, and to be involved with poetry at this moment, of course, is to have those very mixed feelings of sadness and also of appreciation for your great poet, Tremisini. This is called In the Interim. We arrived in Dublin to find you gone. No, to see that you were present everywhere. At Euston Station, before the shops were open, stacks of newspapers bore your face, as we bear now your loss. What have we gained? We have no image for it, only these sounds, these words. At the Farmgate Cafe in the English Market, a spray of orchids next to your poem on the wall. Someone was talking about how long it will take for Ireland to realize what that loss actually is. And I think that's quite true. It will be interesting to see over the next year how that that accomplishment sort of sifts out into a kind of cultural understanding of what he represented. I think it will be very interesting for us from afar to see how that plays out. My wife and I spend a good deal of time in Australia, and we have a house which we built on top of an old volcano, which hasn't gone off in quite a while. And this area is called the Gold Fields. This is the area where they found a tremendous amount of gold in the 1850s. And they turned every square inch of that territory upside down, looking for gold. And that's why it has the title, Hard Life in the Gold Fields. In the far, far distance, just below the lowering sky, with its wash of blue and gray, a line of light appears, as if pressed down upon the land and spreading horizontally along the long horizon. And in that narrow band, white clouds shine, the inverse of the dark hills surrounding them. What isn't a sign these days? Has hope diminished to that extent? That a mere streak of light is set upon as evidence that all is not darkness, that the times may yet turn around and dawn burn brighter? And if the world in its indifference can bring us comfort, what need have we of benevolence? The sky gods withdrew a long time ago, but that streak of light, how it answers to a need, and the need answerable to neither hope nor faith, but to the ground of being in the world. That we should exist at all seems unaccountable. A happy accident, we say, though no one believes it at heart. Were it not for all our cruelty, we might live in grace, as hatred is darkness, and darkness the absence of light. We cannot get behind this world, only deeper into it, until inside out, its strangeness is revealed, and every prospect, every certainty we thought we knew, turns foreign to us, and fresh, like that band of light and those rising clouds. It is only when hope falls away that there is any hope. Look hard at the world, says the world. It is yourself. A number of years ago, after a string of readings, I realized that my poetry was so lugubrious and dark that I was just depressing everybody that I read to, and that I should try to do something to counteract this problem. And I was thinking of just how wonderful the sort of stand-up comedians are. I'm not a stand-up comedian, maybe I'm a stand-up tragic, but and these wonderful one-liners. And I realized that I could not do one-liners, they were beyond me. But I could manage two-liners. And so I produced a number of poems called two-liners. So they have actually I cheated because they have titles. They have a title and then they're just two lines. So I'll read you a few of these. The first is called My Father's Neuropathy. I've staggered out of a lot of bars, he says, but never into one before. I grew up in upstate New York, and there's some pretty wild areas up there, and this, in a very remote section of the state, there was a sign on the local jail. Sign an upstate jail in winter. Any prisoner not back by 6 o'clock will be locked out. Sign on an upstate farm. Anyone found here at night will be found here in the morning. My sister lives in San Francisco, and she frequents a cafe called she calls it the Dirty Cafe. This is called Prudence at the Dirty Cafe. The girl in the miniskirt and tank top considers how best to retrieve her hairbrush on the floor. Ageist. How is it that going downhill is uphill all the way? And growing up in this remote area of upstate New York, I grew up in what I would call a basketball culture. Here it would probably be rugby, football. I'm not sure what court is called.
Hurling.
We used to do hurling, but it was a different kind of beer glass. And this is about, and the town fathers and their wisdom realized that to keep us somehow from ransacking the village, that they would collect us into one spot, which became known as Teen Town, and it had a basketball court and a little place where you could gather and play music. And so this was in the 60s, when the sort of rock and roll was starting up, and all these sort of weird and ridiculous dances started appearing, which figure in this poem. So this poem is about this place that we used to go to play basketball, or b-ball, as we call it, and some of the people that I grew up with. So it's called Teen Town. Off North Grand and beside the creek, on a dead-end road lies Teen Town. We hung out there, biding our time, as the 60s rolled in on the airwaves, Beach Boys, Beatles, and birds beat in our blood like mainline hormones till we got every song by heart. The girls gossiped and we played hoops. Holmes flicks a pass behind his back to Helm, who hits a fadeaway jump. The Pendergast twins clear the boards and Brof gives an elbow and a bump. When a 45 was a record, not a gun, that was a 22. A 33 was cool, but a radio ruled, and a GTO with four on the floor and a 389. At 16 we drove, and 18 was legal, but drinking was a teen town taboo when girls gossiped and we played hoops. Sylvia Sue, Lonnie and Barb had the right look, wore the right garb, songs the end-all, dance the be-all, teen town revolved around b-ball. We looked for action on Saturday night with a fist fight as good as a movie. We knew our roles and played our parts with a courage born from fear of failing. That rush of adrenaline was counterfeit hate and friendship, the real emotion, while girls gossiped and we played hoops. Holmes flicks a pass behind his back to Helm, who hits a fadeaway jump. The Pendergast twins clear the boards and Brof gives an elbow and a bump. On a rainy day, we'd go inside and try to tease the girls, but girls know more and decide who's in. And if you're out, you never know why. So we do the dance of not wanting to dance, the twist, swim, pony, and jerk, mashed potato, and loaf of motion. Then the girls gossip and we play hoops. Sylvia Sue, Lonnie, and Barb had the right look, wore the right garb, songs the end-all, dance the be-all, teen town revolved around b-ball. Off North Grand, beside the creek, on a dead-end road lies Teen Town. The decades pass, but the rights are the same. The only change is in the pronoun. another poem from this period. You probably know a band that had a sort of a one-song wonder, although aficionados would disagree with this. The Procol Harum did a song called "A Whiter Shade of Pale." Did that really make it big time? A whiter shade of pale. In 68, I sported a panic button on my blazon. Pushed, it read, "Things will get worse before they get worse." After the assassinations, I threw it away. On edge, we were now living on the edge. Across the hall, Drexler, the quiet kid from Belgium, played Procol Harum full blast whenever he left the room, door wide open. Conformity consisted of learning how to think for ourselves, but we knew one another by our oddities, while the teachers knew us for our failings. That year, falling in love sent me stumbling backwards. The real fall came later, when Sydney took up with Ramzur, the handsome hockey star, who insisted we arm wrestle because I could hit a ball farther than he. My roommate Leap, the math genius from Menlo Park, was California cool. A raider, a mainline Mensa Miles Gloriosus, but Schifford was pure New York. I tried making a virtue of my virtues, but when I puzzled things out, the pieces never fit. Prep school prepared you to succeed, but no one prepared us for success. That was a blank we would have to fill on our own, or not, like Drexler's empty room, glaring a whiter shade of pale. Not long ago, I heard that song again by chance on the radio, and these memories welled up quick. Pool and clearing, spring fed and coruscating. Those pieces of the past coalesced suddenly into a whole, beyond the pain of nostalgia or wistfulness for lost youth. A presence instead, an intensity so tensile the insight stretches out past the instant of its moment, as when you are perfectly happy or in complete despair. And in the midst of it, I thought of Drexler and wondered about that song haunting the radio, about why he did what he did and why it affected me so much then and now, decades after. Whatever happened to Drexler, we asked, as if we could say what it was that had happened to us from a point of view outside ourselves. 2 days later, 36 years later, I got an email from Drexler reading, "Remember me?" This is called Q&A. And it is a Q&A, but the Q stands for questioner. The Q stands for questioner, and A stands for something else. Questioner. By now, everyone has a grievance, honed to a fine point by the abrasions of long acquaintance. Are we stuck? Angel. You will know progress by the number of people who are angry with you. Question. Seeing is so partial. How will I know fullness? How will I empty my eyes? Angel. It is a blessing to see so poorly. If your skin were transparent, how vulgar you would appear to one another. Veins, ligaments, tissue, organs pulsing. How much worse to know motivation inside out? Questioner. You see us thus? Angel. Worse. You occupy a dump seeping effluvium, and yet you have no idea of your purity. Questioner. Then it is true. Children playing with boats at the pool's edge, couples walking aglow on the gravel path, the old woman feeding the stray cats in the park are all hints of what we might become, having lost what once we were. Angel. So we are told. We are only angels and cannot look farther than our own realm allows. Yes, there are those few who appear kindled, but they are unaccountable and they frighten us. Questioner. Then you do not know our future. Angel. We do not even know your past. We are here as long as you are here, as long as you seek to question yourself. The journey that I would take as a boy from my house through the village to the school every day. For some mad reason, I decided that it had to be breathless in all one sentence. So if I started to gasp, I thought. Across the tree-lined street, where curbside in autumn we raked and burned our piles of leaves, learning then how to play with fire. Down the dirt driveway between the neighbor's barn and a high wooden fence overhung with branches of thick climbing vines, protecting the lonely woman who spied on us all day. Over the path through underbrush where we played out dramas contrived from the fantastic trauma of adolescence, then onto the level backyard of the neighbor's neighbors who were old and kind and never complained of the trespass. So we skirted their gardens and never did them mischief, crossing behind their house and driveway to Clinton Circle and through the circle with its trellised garden and stonework, a public space no one used except late at night. Then a sprint over the sloping lawn of the angry man, never reconciled to the fate of serving the shortcut. Quick onto his stone wall and a jump to my friend's front yard, where they harvested dandelions and made yellow wine. His dad owned a hunting bow with razor arrows for deer, but we could hardly bend the bow, and so learned the man's strength. over the bridge, over the creek, under which torment ruled, while we played at building dams and searched for tadpoles and frogs. Then up the paved road by the small courthouse of the JP to Grand Street, with its oversized houses and mansard roofs. Down Chapel Street by the Lutheran Church of the High Steeple, whose golden ball on top looks skewered like a shish kebab. Entering the grounds of the undertaker's establishment, all red brick and creamy trim and immaculate manicured lawns, and in the cellar the bodies his son would help prepare. Right to the back of the property to the path across the vacant lot, where once I cornered a startled deer and then became the frightened one facing desperation. Up and stumbling down the uneven path, kicking aside milkweed and burdock, kelpweed and thistle, and chicory and Queen Anne's lace, wild carrot bird's nest of wasted ground, where I ran after butterflies but found the mere insects dead. Then the gravel parking lot across from the library, the high ceilings, strange rituals and hushed silences, seeming more a place of worship, more ancient than it was, and finally up the street, turning left through the iron gate, into the courtyard and playground of the imposing school, where daydreams stopped and humiliating knowledge began. In Australia, in the city of Melbourne, it turned out a number of years ago that there was a bombing took place, and it was an event that was simply based on some ethnic hatred that had flared up and had sort of nothing to do with the Australians. And it happened on a very expensive district called Toorak. And this is called Plastic Explosive in Toorak Road. Imagine a young woman working on a mannequin in a shop window, one of these expensive shops. The shop assistant steps up into the window bay demurely, pauses, and begins to undress the mannequin. Smiling at her thoughts, self-conscious in exposure, she notices she is noticed. The man in the car is also young, but his smile is forced, his look abstract. Nakedness is forced. She begins dismembering. First an arm, then another lies on the ground. With a tenderness that perplexes her, she holds her head in her lap. She can almost cry. Read two more. This is called Stellar Junk. The first to return were the satellites, like so many shooting stars in the fall air. Later, fragments of a space station, detritus from failures we had ignored or forgotten. And it dawned on us that a worldwide depression had settled over the young. Scientists were puzzled. People were afraid. Oh Lord, they said, give us another vision. Soon everything slowed down. New Yorkers shuffled in the street. Cars stalled out on hills. And then, one day, a violin floated down like a balloon. Then someone's lost keys, then single pairs of socks, earrings, gloves, engagement rings, and everything of value we thought we had lost rained upon us, made us feel whole again, and we cried for the joy of it, and we laughed with the simple terror of not knowing why. Oh Lord, we shouted, give us another vision. The world was cluttered with memory. people walked about as if stunned in a weather of weariness, their eyelids weighed down. And so it came to pass, in daylight, one by one, like planes landing at LaGuardia, they returned. We thought they were angels, transfigurations in robes, but saints, martyrs came, shrouded, Lazarus and the prophets, mystics, church fathers. They crumpled into the dust at our feet. Some wore smiles, others the grimace of death masks. We could not bear to lift them, their prophecy fulfilled. O Lord, we cried, give us another vision. By then, we had fallen to our knees, our lips mumbling involuntary prayers. We watched the skies, knowing what would come. The heaviness in our hearts bringing down. In a glory, a halo, he took days to arrive. We grew accustomed to his atomic light. He was falling so slowly, head over barefoot heels, his garments flapping in the celestial air. He landed, face down, legs broken. No one approached, until the children came and gathered him. Then we carried the body to a cross we had prepared on a hill. The wounds had never healed. That job was easy, though many turned away from the nailing. No one cast lots, no pieces of silver could suffice. After 3 days, we took him down. He had the weight of our own incumbents. O Lord, we prayed, give us another vision. The tides are running higher. Seabirds inhabit the forest. We are leaden with acceptance. For a long time, we didn't notice, but now, more huge than the sun in the sky, visible all day, we see the moon coming down, and all the seas are rising to meet it. We hope it will end there. We are looking forward to uncreation, to beyond our own time. O Lord, Lord, we give you our vision. I want to end with a poem from this CD that I did with Katie Maloney, the sound artist over here, in Cork last year. We worked together for a couple of weeks at the guest house, the Artist Collective, which you should all know about if you don't. And it was picked up by Farpoint Recordings up in Dublin, and so it's just come out as a CD of sound, music, and poetry. And I'm shamelessly flogging it here behind me. But I thought I'd at least give you a sample of one of the poems, if not the music, from this. And the poem is called County Kerry. The very smell of the sea beckons, pungent, redolent of other shores. I walk the beach with my forebears. They set off, and I returned. We have found one another out. The lighthouse at Phoenix looks in all directions at once. Comings and goings, its only concern. This is a place of stone. This is where the long view obtains. Limestone conglomerate holds it all together. Beyond the farthest reach of this ocean, someone dear is fading fast away. He may even be gone as I say these words. His faith is that he has always been the life that is leaving him, leaving us. The sea beckons. The lighthouse is dark. Clouds obscure the high hills. The wind is steady. This is where we find ourselves.